Welcome to Tuesday Topics. We're very glad to have all of you here. And as we promised last week, our topic tonight will continue our discussion of audio description. But this time, we're not going to be concerned about audio description as it operates in movie theaters or on television, but instead, audio description of live events. We have a number of folks here, and for those of you who might like to attend in the future, we meet in the politics room, which can be found as part of the Our Place community, which is a part of our ACB Radio website. We'd like particularly to thank Talking Communities for making our various chat rooms available. Without them, we wouldn't have an opportunity to be utilizing this technology. We're also pleased to inform all of you that we are being now broadcast on a delayed basis on ACB Radio, beginning on Monday evenings at 9 p.m. The Monday evenings at 9 p.m. programs will actually be the Tuesday topics that took place the week before for the most part. Actually, we may end up being a little bit further behind than that. But the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, is that Tuesday Topics is a live broadcast in our chat rooms, which we are editing for broadcast on ACB Radio. We're very pleased to have ACB Radio broadcasting this and would like to express our particular appreciation to Dave Williams, who's doing a superb job of production and editing on Tuesday Topics. Enough of introductions. Let's get to the topic of audio description in live venues. And I'd like to begin by asking whether any of the folks who are on with us tonight on Tuesday Topics have actually had an opportunity to attend an audio-described live event. And if you have, could you tell us a little bit about what that was like? So let me open that up as our first question for discussion.
I have. This is Debbie Grubb from Bradenton, Florida. I have attended many live broadcasts and theaters, and it is an absolutely wonderful experience. I attended live productions in Maryland when I lived there at the Morris Mechanic Theater, was one of the people that helped to get the program started, and have attended several live performances in conjunction with our legislative seminar that ACB holds, and usually there is some kind of a performance that they make available to us that is audio described. The performances are described in the following manner, or the ones that I've attended anyway are described in the following manner. You enter and at some place in the theater, sometimes at the hat check place, sometimes at the ticket window, you have to find out ahead of time. You pick up a headset and a receiver, and once in a while they will ask you to leave a credit card or your ID card or some sort of like little deposit, not cash, but something like those cards, so that you will be sure to return the receiver. You go into the theater and turn on the receiver and put the headphones on, and you hear something that everybody else in the theater doesn't hear. You usually hear the reading of the program, which is wonderful when you've never had that opportunity before, because sometimes when you're an excited friend, they might give you, well, this is going to happen in Act 1, and here are some of the big stars. But it's so wonderful in audio description, because you get to hear just about everything about the play, about the people that are in the show. It's wonderful. And then the show begins, and between dialogue, you are given descriptions of costuming, descriptions of movement, descriptions of facial expressions, that kind of thing. And it adds to the show in a way that unless you have experienced it, you can't begin to understand. Our imaginations are wonderful things, and I wouldn't part with my imagination for anything in the world, but actually to know right along with the audience members in a way that doesn't disturb them, but that you can laugh when they laugh and not wonder what they're laughing about. You can feel what they're feeling and enjoy the show in all of its avenues and all of its nuances. It's just a wonderful experience.
Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted someone to do, talk a little bit about how the process worked, and also impressions. Have other folks who are here had an opportunity to attend a live event with audio description? Okay, let me just add a couple of things to what Debbie said about her experience with audio description. I've had occasion to attend some audio descriptions in live theater, and the thing that probably struck me the most about being able to do that was that when you go to a play, part of what you get is watch a play and get the ambience of live theater, that is, listening to the stage. And you make assumptions about what's there and what's not there. And one of the things that is wonderful for me about audio description is that it deepens the experience by giving ideas about movement that occurs on the stage, about specific kinds of actions that are happening within the play, and a range of other things. It's really pretty exciting, in fact, and well worth doing. So, audio description in live theater is a good thing, or at least those of us who have participated in it think it's a good thing. Let's, for the heck of it, try Gary once more and see if he can tell us something, try once more with his transmission with regard to audio description.
This thing about describe the plays and things, it sounds like a good idea, but I don't think we have that capability here in Michigan.
That's really the point of our session tonight. We want to talk a little bit about what we can do in ACB to perhaps make audio description a reality in live theaters in our local communities. Let me ask Debbie, who seems to be the other person who has lots of experience with audio description in live theater, if she knows very much about where the funding for audio description in live theater comes from.
I don't know a lot about it as a general rule. I do know that when we were in Maryland, we got a grant and bought equipment that was shared between four or five different theaters. It meant that not as many performances could be described by each theater, but it meant that we could have a bunch of audio description. It was the equipment was shared between the Lyric, which is our opera house in Baltimore. It was shared with a couple of college theaters, our main theater, the Morris Mechanic, where lots of Broadway shows come. So we had a wide variety of audio description by using equipment. The other thing that we did was we shared describers so that as the training came into being, a describer might be describing an opera or he or she might be describing a comedy. It really depended. So we had very good describers that described it at practically all of the theaters. Of course, this meant that the theaters had to be within a relatively reasonable distance from each other, but all of the describers drove and got themselves and transported the equipment from theater to theater, and that seemed to work very well for us. Another thing that we did while I have the floor to get to help people come to theater, because I think one of the things I sort of heard Gary saying was about transportation to the theaters, and one of the things we did was we had a program where if you bought a ticket at the regular theater price, then a ticket would be given to you for someone to come to the show with you and bring you to the show. So those were the kinds of things that we did in Maryland, at least. And I don't know how the program has progressed. I'm sure it's progressed a lot since I left, but that's where it was when I left the state.
Thanks, Debbie. So one of the things that that audio description has done is to enable local affiliates of ACB to actually get a grant, perhaps, to buy the audio description equipment, which isn't really expensive. It really depends on how complicated you want to make it. But essentially, you can buy receivers for probably less than $100 a piece, and you can buy a transmitter that will work with all of those receivers, for no more than $300 or $400. Depending on the quality, you get multiple transmissions or multiple channels that can allow you to transmit various things on different channels. And in general, getting a multi-channel system is actually somewhat better because it allows you to describe other things, perhaps do some things in another language, and perhaps actually have more than one kind of audio description on some occasions. The equipment is actually pretty straightforward and reasonably easy to acquire and very easy to train people to use. So grants that are arranged by local affiliates are certainly one way of acquiring access to audio description. What I'd like to describe is a somewhat theoretical process, but also one that has operated in some communities. And I think it's really important for us to at least try floating this with some of our local governments to see what happens, or if we're a statewide affiliate, perhaps with our state governments. Essentially, what I'm talking about is utilizing Title II of the ADA. Title II of the ADA requires counties and state governments to be accessible to people who are disabled. Using the logic of Title II, it seems to me that if counties are providing grants to local theaters, opera companies, ballets, and so on, and I think many people do, then it seems to me that we can legitimately ask that they include in their request for proposals for grants to these organizations that they include at least some funding for interpreting and perhaps some funding to either acquire equipment or hire audio describers who would actually be available to do video description or audio description of local theater. And I'll have a little bit more to say about that in just a moment. If I'm correct, and I've talked with Gail Krause about this, and who works in an ADA compliance office here in Miami-Dade County, and what Gail tells me is that a county could certainly do that, and so could a state, but that not many have, and that it is at least arguable that since the services aren't being delivered directly by the county, they may not absolutely be covered by the ADA. My view is that since a substantial proportion of the services that these entities provide is being paid for by the county, we ought to see the theatrical requirement for audio description as operating in the same kind of environment as does, for instance, the requirement that a building that's leased be accessible, or that organizations who contract with state and local governments are required to be accessible. I can't say for sure whether, in fact, this is a wonderful and cool idea, but I don't think that we'll know that it won't work until a few of us in local communities try it. So one of the things that I'm suggesting is that we reach out to our local governments at the time when they're doing budgets each year, which in fact has just passed in August or September, and A, begin by seeing if they will make that a requirement for people who want to get theatrical or performance grants, or alternatively, perhaps create an environment where organizations, perhaps of the blind, could apply for a grant to acquire the equipment and to conduct training sessions for audio description. And then, in effect, our local affiliates would become the purveyors of audio description, but would perhaps be able to get a lot further If state and local government gets directly involved and makes it clear to theaters, even if they don't make it mandatory, that they will be looking favorably at audio description grants as a core issue when making next year's allocations for funding in the county or in the state. So, what do people think of that as an off-the-wall idea?
It just sounds like maybe a good idea to me to have the communities involved with audio description in theaters.
Oh, I'm Dan from Michigan. Audio description for live performances, you mean like you're talking on TV or where?
No, live performances kind of by definition, Dan, means in a theater or in a park where a performance is being done live and where audio describers are actually there and making or becoming involved in providing descriptions to folks while the performance is happening.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they could do that because they could script what they're going to say, because that's how they do it for DBS movies. They kind of write their own scripts anyway. So they could figure out what they're going to say. But, you know what they could do? Because I don't know if you know this, but some movie theaters have headphones that you can put on and you can hear the descriptive movie.
Yep, cool. We actually talked about some of those elements last week. Other people have thoughts on whether the ADA seems to represent an appropriate approach to getting audio description more widely happening in live performance.
Good afternoon, or good evening, Paul. Marvin Rush here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and hope things for you and everyone out there going well. You know, a couple of things that sort of ran through my mind. I think that probably people in the bigger cities are going to have much more luck with getting live audio descriptions, which granted this, the equipment's not that expensive, but I think that if we go at it, we have to go at it not in an adversarial way, but in a way that says we're going to work with the city governments and with state governments.
Yeah, I think, Marvin, and by the way, welcome. I think you're a first-time Tuesday topic person, so we're glad to have you with us. And, yeah, I absolutely agree that we don't need to make this adversarial, and, in fact, that we had perhaps better have a lot of information before we go to state governments about precisely how we ought to make audio description happen. Because if we simply go to them and demand that they do it and aren't able to help them make it happen, then we're defeating our own purpose. And if we demand, rather than trying to create an environment where it's where everyone's comfortable with it, I absolutely agree with you that we're not going to get very far. So that's a good point. Other thoughts on the ADA and the use of local and state government?
I think that the ADA aspect is a wonderful idea. I wish we had thought of it when we were busy getting our grant. We got our grant through the auspices of the Technology Assistance Program. So in a sense, it was a governmental grant. And we got the grant with the understanding that not only would we fund audio description, but that there would be a described, an interpreted performance for those who are deaf and hard of hearing, which we did. So I think that government can be brought into the loop, and I think it's an excellent idea that it be brought into the loop. Regarding how to help them help us, one of the things that we did was we went to someone who had a reputation in audio description and theater who could help us get started in Maryland, and that was the people of the Washington Ear, Margaret and Cody Fansteel. But anybody somebody that lives in an area near someone who has an audio description going, that is really an excellent way to get started. And of course, Brian, I think, mentioned last week that there are materials available to help us help our theaters and help our governments and help all the people involved in helping us getting this program off the ground, that there are materials to help them do that. But we in Maryland had a wonderful experience because we had the support of the Technology Assistance Program. We had the help of the people over at the Washington Ear. We advertised for describers and had a lot of really wonderful people who were interested not only in describing, but once they had been trained, teaching it. So the people at the Washington Ear helped us train our first group of describers, and after that, our describers taught others, and it was a wonderful experience.
Cool. Thanks, Deb. I appreciate that. I think you've made really good points, and I think that in just a few minutes, we will talk a little bit about where we can get training and how we can create a cohort of describers. What I'd like to do at this point is to perhaps clarify one point that Debbie made just so that it's really clear, and that is that the funding that was responsible for Debbie getting her funds for audio description is again something that ought to be that is available in virtually every state now, and these are funds that were made available through federal legislation called the Tech Act, and each state has a Tech Act entity and is specifically set up to make access to information more available to people with disabilities. And I think it's really important that we begin to make Tech Act funding work for issues that directly impact people who are blind. I think the Tech Act is an excellent place to look at for funding audio description. Has anyone else had any other experience with described audio and funding that they'd like to add to the mix this evening?
Good evening. This is Rachel from Orlando, and I've never had any experience with the audio description of theater. It sounds like a really neat experience from what I've heard from Debbie. I'm wondering on the funding issues. I know some of the local theaters here have series of shows that they will sell kind of like a season ticket deal ahead of time, and I'm wondering, although I think the funding that you were speaking about, Paul, is a great idea, but I'm wondering as far as additional funding, kind of something that the theaters themselves can kind of take on, is where some of the ticket sales go toward funding these programs for audio description.
Yeah, we just got a text message that indicates that the Tech Act has just been refunded at the federal level, and that's really good news because it means that there'll actually be more opportunity for us to get access to those funds, and also to become involved in the planning for what the Tech Act does. By the way, that might be another whole Tuesday topic for us to look at. There are some states that have created some really cool projects. And there are other states where I don't think the Tech Act has done very much good for disabled people in general and for blind people in particular. So that might be another topic for us to take a look at. Let's talk a little bit about how you create audio describers, because it is not an easy process. Debbie actually described the Washington Ear as one of the entities that helped them tremendously. And I think it's really important to understand just how important that is. The Washington Ear, which is run by Cody Fansteel and his wife, Margaret, is perhaps the very first entity to become involved in audio description for live performances in the country. they really wrote many of the rules, many of the handbooks, many of the manuals. But a lot more has happened since then, and there's a lot more information available now concerning audio description. Kim Charlson in Massachusetts got a grant from their state government, I think, and has actually written a training manual for audio describers. More importantly, she is prepared to actually come to local communities, if it's arranged enough time in advance, I think, to do some training for audio describers. And so Kim is another excellent resource that all of us ought to seriously consider using in order to forward audio description in our particular areas. And I want to mention one other resource while we're on the subject of resources, and I hope I get this right. There is an organization called Audio Description International, which is an organization that is open to membership all over the world. It has describers from various countries in the world. It also has consumers from various countries in the world. Occasionally there are representatives from networks and others who actively involve themselves in audio description and who exchange ideas about how best to do it. It's a fascinating website. The website, I think, is adinternational.org. That is adinternational.org. I could be wrong, and if I am, I'll correct myself on a future Tuesday topic. But I think that that is, in fact, the website. They also operate a listserv that anyone is free to join. There's not a huge amount of traffic, and some of the topics discussed are fascinating. Do blind people want a lot of description of clothing? Is color really important to blind folks? Are blind people really interested in all the sex, or is just a little bit all that's required? So it becomes an exciting kind of question that we have an opportunity to explore through their listserv that you can join through adinternational.org. So I would encourage all of you to check out that website. Among other things, they also have such things as listings of all of the TV elements that are being done. There's a gentleman named Mr. Clark in Ontario who has done a really good job of trying to keep up with all of the described DVDs that are out there and who occasionally publishes an updated list. And there are a range of other elements up there. There's also some good descriptions of how differently things are being done in Europe and in other parts of the world than they are in this country. Actually, audio description is becoming more and more widespread, for example, in the United Kingdom. I've heard a couple of programs that actually originate in this country, which have been audio described for UK audiences by United Kingdom audio description. And some of the approaches that are taken in the UK to audio description are very different from the ones that are taken in this country. It's well worth listening to. And again, the approach that's happened in England is fascinating as well, because it isn't available on SAP channels in quite the way that it is here. It's not available on all networks. It's only available in some iterations of television. So it's somewhat different in the UK than it is here. So it's kind of fascinating. Okay, let's talk a little bit about training. I feel like I'm talking an awful lot tonight, and I'm sorry for that. I would much prefer to have other people talking than me. But let's talk a little bit about the training and care of audio describers, because there are a bunch of issues that surround that.
One of the things that we did, it's making me feel very guilty that I'm not doing as much of this here in Florida as I did at home, because I was in on the very beginning of this at home, and reliving all of this is making me feel like I really need to get going again. We had an advisory body of people with disabilities who took advantage of audio description. And this group, pretty much after the original training of our original core group, governed how our describers were trained, how our program worked, and that was very helpful. We had training that followed the Cody and Margaret Fansteel school of thought on the issues, and our describers, what was amazing was they all followed the same rules, but their personalities, it seemed to add a little bit of it made their descriptions different, and yet all of them were true to the thought that you don't give personal opinions, that you keep the description very objective, but how a person speaks, the tone of voice, the turn of phrase, all of that really added to the descriptive, the audio descriptive experience. We had one or two of our teachers that were particularly good that we considered our master teachers, and they headed up our training. And our training lasted for a day, and it focused on the do's and the don'ts of audio description, of never interrupting the dialogue, of not giving personal opinion, of keeping the description flowing and true to the scope of the play. And there was a great deal of emphasis placed on what is too much and what is too little. And it was a wonderfully fascinating experience to be a part of.
You know, something that you know, talking about the training of describers and essentially what we get from the descriptive video services, I find sometimes a bit disturbing. And let me use as an example, because it's been around a while and probably everybody's seen it, and that is a movie, Braveheart. Now, that movie, I happen to have seen in the theater and all that stuff. When the descriptive version came out, it was edited to edit out, foul language or whatever. You know, whatever you want to call it. There are various adjectives to use. But I wonder who has made the decision that, you know, blind people should be insulated from language that is in a movie when it is originally produced and filmed. That is one thing that disturbed me greatly, because I've seen it happen in several movies. You know, I don't think that blind folks should be insulated, because we are blind, from what everybody else sees.
This is Rachel from Orlando, and I'm wondering if some of that might be due to some of the grants that provide the funding for the movies, in that they have conditions that they have to meet in order to produce the movie. That would be my guess, but I'm not really sure. I never actually thought about it. This conversation is bringing up more questions for me, so good.
I think your point is well made, sir, but I don't think that most of the folks who produce movies actually censor them. I think that one of the things that may have happened is the version of Braveheart that you may have seen was actually based on a Braveheart edit that was done for television. And the foul language and that kind of thing would have been removed from that. I know that WGBH absolutely and categorically does not regard itself as in the business of censorship. and includes all the bad language that is in a movie, period. So I think in general, censorship would be a bad thing, and we ought to regard it as a bad thing. Do you want to come back and tell us whether you're actually talking about a purchased DVS video of Braveheart, or are you talking about a privately made video that could perhaps have been taped from television?
No, as it turns out, this is a purchased DVS video with a describer behind it and everything. I'm sure I could dig it out somewhere. But it was actually a DVS that had a describer that was in. I would have to pull the video and find out who the service was that did the descriptions of it. But, you know, since I did go to the theater and knew the movie relatively well, I was, you know, a bit disappointed that it didn't, you know, it was different than the one I saw in the theaters.
Well, I think Paul's right. WGBH would never have done that. And when we were training people in the theater, we said that they're not to put their moral views in play in terms of the video, of the description. They are to simply describe what goes on, that a person makes a decision that he or she wants to see a play when they buy a ticket and walk in the door, and that that decision has to be honored. And we never had, in all the time that this program was going on while I lived in Maryland, we never had a describer say, I don't want to describe a particular show, or I don't feel comfortable describing this show. And our people that were in the audience absolutely loved it, and I don't think anybody ever felt censored. Paul, at one point before the hour is up, I'd like to discuss the problems of, once we have audio description in the theater, actually getting people to come to the show. I mentioned early on in this program that we had a program whereby we gave a ticket for a ticket purchased. But one of the things that happened was, because blindness is such a low instance minority, and people that come to the theater in general, and among the sighted world, among people without disabilities, is a minority, it meant that we didn't have the sweeping turnout that I think some of the describers thought that we would have, and a little bucking up and assuring them that they were doing everything right, and that it wasn't their fault that we were not having 100 blind people sitting in the audience of any given performance, was in no way because of their inability to describe the shows well. So I think that at some point this is something we need to discuss.
Thanks very much, Debbie. I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's an important issue. We can actually spend a little time talking about it now. It seems to me, at least getting a little involved in the discussion, that audio description is a really cool idea, but unfortunately a pretty substantial proportion of the people at whom audio description is aimed don't have a lot of money. That means that live theater, which is by definition pretty expensive. I know I gave Gail a birthday present of two tickets, one for me and one for her, to a Broadway musical, and each of those tickets was $75, and I promise they weren't the front seats. It was by no means the front row. So live theater can cost an awful lot of money, and therefore we really do have to ask the question, what is an appropriate way to help more people who are blind attend these performances? Obviously, there are some options open. Should we go to local service clubs like Lions Clubs and Rotary Clubs? Should we use local affiliate ACB dollars? Should we seek grants that from state and local government that might allow folks who are blind to attend? So for all of, you know, those are certainly some models that we can look at. But I think you're absolutely right, Debbie, that figuring out a way to make blind people attend these things is pretty important, because if we're going out and trying to sell the idea of audio description, if we then have nobody turn up there, then it's pretty frightening. Any other thoughts on other ways that we can encourage blind folks to attend audio description in live performance once we have it there?
I think transportation is a key component. Besides the cost of the ticket, transportation is a key component of this. And I think if we could find a way, either by our ACB affiliates chartering a bus for one night and having that be a program that their members are involved in, or whatever, or the ticket for ticket, two for price of one that we were involved in. The price of the tickets and transportation, it seems to me, are the two key components that keep people who are blind and visually impaired out of live theater.
I think that's a really good point, Debbie. Transportation is a major if you're everywhere. One of the things that's worked in some communities is a number of communities actually have paratransit systems. And one of the things that some communities have been able to persuade paratransit providers to do is to provide transit to an event like that free, gratis, and for nothing as a service to the disability community, regardless of whether the specific individuals who are being transported are in fact paratransit users. And that's certainly something that it's worth looking at.
Well, the thing about that is, though, that sometimes they complain that their costs are going up too, you know, to run these services, paratransit.
Yeah, I think you're right, Gary. Paratransit service providers certainly believe that that they're not making lots of money. But on the other hand, I think that we can legitimately say to service providers, and we need to be saying to service providers, in exchange for the money that you are making, you can occasionally make a contribution to the disability community. And this is a really good example where they can get publicity with local government and state government, which provides most of their funding, as well as with the private sector, where many of them have fingers and pies as well. So if we sell it to paratransit providers, I think that some of them at least will be prepared to do it.
What about getting groups of performers involved in the fundraising and awareness of these types of events? You know, a lot of the groups are always looking for community type events to get involved in, and I'm thinking that it would be right up their alley to promote such an event, like getting blind and vision impaired people to the theater, which is the kind of thing that they're already interested in, and just tie that in as a community event to be able to raise that awareness and raise, even maybe do a fundraiser shows kind of thing, so that they could raise money to purchase some of the tickets for vision impaired people as well.
I think that's a really good idea. The other approach that's been tried in some communities is many theaters who are doing productions will actually allow their dress rehearsal to be described to folks who are blind and visually impaired who come, and therefore won't actually charge them for admission. And so that's another model that we can look at. Okay, here is, let's talk just a little more about some of the other questions that it seems to me we need to look at. Probably the biggest controversy that operates for audio describers in the private theater is, what is the model that ought to be used for audio describers? And there's a real parallel here with interpreting as it emerged for people who were deaf. In the beginning, interpreters tended to do it for nothing. They were often family members or people who were interested in the welfare of the deaf and who provided interpreting essentially free, gratis, and for nothing. As interpreters became more professional and codes of ethics began to emerge and organizations of interpreters began to develop, it became more common for an interpreter to be hired by someone to provide that interpreting. So the question that arises for audio describers is very much the same one that emerged at the beginning of the period of interpreting. Should audio describers, in fact, volunteer their services and be recruited from among volunteers, or should we seek to find professionally qualified audio describers who legitimately can expect to be paid a substantial hourly rate for the professionality of the scripts they prepare and the job that they do describing? Thoughts on that, folks?
I think there is a major difference between interpreting for the deaf and audio describers. And if there were all the money in the world, I'd say audio describers should be paid. Ours were wonderful volunteers who drove at their own expense, went to the training at their own expense, did everything at their own expense. But the point that I was going to make about interpreters are used in everyday life, whether it be in a court setting, whether it be in a meeting where people who are deaf or hard of hearing are in attendance. There is a market that goes far beyond audio description for those people who have the gift to interpret for the deaf. So there is a market for these people, and the theater is just one aspect of that rather global market for people who are deaf and hard of hearing who need the services of an interpreter. And government has to pay for those interpreters when government programs are involved or meetings are involved. And so there is a rather substantial hourly rate, and there is a code. They can only interpret for so many hours and all of that. But I think that would be much harder to do, although it would be wonderful if it could be done, for audio describers where the market is much narrower.
I certainly think that you have more control over the situation when you are paying somebody to do a job like audio description. You have more control. You know, there's certainly some great volunteers out there who might do a wonderful job, but if you pay someone to do something, then you have that ability to say, we need to have it done this way, and they can expect that if they've agreed to do this job and they're going to do it and they want to keep this job, that they're going to do that the way that the code states that it should be done.
Debbie, can you please go ahead and moderate for a few minutes?
Okay. Anybody else have anything to say about whether or not audio describers should be paid? I think all of us would like to see them paid if there were the money to pay them. So does anybody have anything to say about that or about how we could raise funds to pay them?
Well, I think probably they should be paid, the professional ones anyway, because audio description kind of harkens back to the days of, you know, the old-time radio shows where they had narrators and things of that nature.
That's a very interesting point, Gary. Janelle, are you still here? We haven't heard from you in a while. What do you think about this?
I am still here, and I guess just hadn't particularly had anything to add, but if there are funds available, certainly then you can require more of people, but I think that decision would need to be made on a case-by-case basis.
I know some of the theaters that were in our loop in Maryland were little college theaters, and they couldn't have afforded to pay audio describers. And the other thing, Rachel had some wonderful ideas about show people doing fundraising and that kind of thing. And for community theater, dinner theater, that is, I think that all of us could get involved in getting them to do that, donating a show for free or giving part of the proceeds of a show to fund audio description. I think that is a phenomenal idea. The problem with the bigger theaters that have the shows that come in from Broadway and all of that are that these people are in and out very briefly. The shows are tremendously expensive, and the theaters don't have a lot to do with it except to provide the place for the show to be. What do you all think about the basic idea of starting audio description in your home area? Has this discussion given you any thoughts to doing so, or made you think that this might be something that you could do?
Well, I think here in the Orlando area, we're kind kind of in a prime location for theater kind of events. I mean, even on a, well, smaller scale, talking about Disney, not quite, but they do have some smaller kind of theater type shows. And even that might be an area to approach for audio description that might even be on a smaller scale than some of the longer shows that we've mainly been referring to here. But I think certainly it's something that we as an organization locally, it opens up a lot of possibilities for activities, for events, for work that we can do as an organization and see it full circle to work on a project and see the benefits of that by, at the end, being able to attend shows that are described. So I think it's a great idea.
Well, yeah, I think that it's a good idea for people to have fundraisers in local communities and figure out, maybe find someone who's willing to volunteer time to do.
Thanks, Gary. You were kind of in and out there, but we really appreciate your comments. It's probably about time for us to be closing down our discussion for tonight, and I'd like to know, are there any areas that those of you who are not really familiar with audio description that you think, well, why didn't we cover this, or I have a question about that? Does anybody have any burning questions that our listeners on the radio might have as well, and that you think in these last remaining minutes that we have together that we should discuss? Like, I guess not. I guess what I would like to say in closing is that, again, audio description is a wonderful experience. It is a cerebral experience. It is a heart experience. It makes you aware of things that you never were aware of before. And in all the descriptive video, all the audio described theatrical performances that I've ever attended, I never felt that the description got in the way. It seemed only to me to enhance what was going on the stage. And the actors and actresses who were aware of what was going on were very thrilled at the idea that theater was truly being made open and totally accessible to a whole new audience. It was just a wonderful experience. And what I would say to anyone who is thinking about doing it, to call the ACB office and to look at that adinternational.org that Paul mentioned earlier, and get your materials, get your ducks in a row. You can really start and get a good grasp on getting audio description with just a few thousand dollars to buy your equipment and to get the training set up. And I think it would be a wonderful experience. And it takes a little creativity. It takes a little knack to try to get other blind people who have never known the theater experience because of lack of money and other things that Paul was mentioning. It takes a little knack to get them involved and get them going. But once you get people hooked on it, they really are converts and just love it. Anybody have anything in closing that they'd like to say?
Yeah, I think this was a great program to just kind of raise that awareness of what's out there. And with the audio description, there is so much that people can gain through that as far as community involvement, going out, getting involved in the community, because that's such a difficult thing for blind people to be able to do. And the more that we are able to make things accessible and make it so that people are going to be able to and to want to get involved in the community, I think that's certainly something worth working towards.
Well, yeah, I think that this whole thing has been an interesting topic tonight about described theater.
Well, good. Does anybody have any ideas about what we might want to discuss for our next Tuesday topic?
Well, Claude mentioned something about the technology initiative or something that we could have a discussion on that. Anybody remember what that was? Some tech here.
Paul had mentioned the Tech Act, which is a federally funded initiative that goes to the various states, and he had mentioned that some states use Tech Act funds and initiatives very well, and others don't, and he had mentioned that that might be something that we would like to discuss. I had mentioned very early on in the program that our original grant from which we started our audio description in live theater came from the Technology Assistance Program, which was a state program run under the auspices and the funding of the Tech Act. I'm sure Paul would be delighted to have us discuss that next week, and hopefully Brian will be back with us. And you technology people who are interested in that kind of thing and interested in learning about it and who know anything about it, you may want to join us out here in the politics room of ACB Radio. As Paul has said many times before, we meet on Tuesday evenings live at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And our Tuesday topic will be the Tech Act, how it works and how to make it work for you. So anybody have any final things they'd like to say? Hearing none, I guess we'll say a good night, and hopefully many of you will join us next week when we discuss the Tech Act, how it works, and how we can make it work for us. And so I bid you all a fond good night.